Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed, and it's Thursday. Means Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. And we've had a number of authors over the past few months that focus on intelligence and the evolution of intelligence in the United States, be it CIA, FBI. Our author of the week is J. Michael Waller. The book, Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. He's senior analyst for strategy at the Center for Security Policy and president of Georgetown Research. He worked for the CIA in Central America, did groundbreaking scholarship after the Soviet Empire's breakup, teaching history methods at America's premier intelligence school, and you've probably read his work in the New York Post, Washington Times, Washington Examiner, The Federalist, and The Wall Street Journal. I appreciate you being with us this morning, and I'd like to start with what prompted you to decide to sit down and write Big Intel?
Well, it was actually the publisher who came to me because he had known me from back when I was doing work with the CIA long ago, but he didn't know that I was. And he was concerned with wokeness in the CIA and would I do a book on it. And I began working on it and thought, you know, it's the FBI affects everybody day to day. Let's also explain that too. So that's how Big Intel came around.
Outside observers may have begun to see what they see as a form of corruption, if you will, within the FBI specifically, but also the CIA around the Trump years because of what people perceived as the using of their power, their authority, their credibility in order to go after Trump. But I'm curious how much further prior to Trump did this evolution begin, and what has this evolution looked like over time?
It began well before this. The tipping point came in October 2011 when Obama executed an executive order to impose what we now call wokeness, but to impose diversity, equity, and inclusion, and a whole lot more on the entire federal government, including the intelligence community. But Obama started this when he first became president by putting a really radical general, and we don't think of our generals as being real radicals, but this one was, former General James Clapper, in charge of the entire intelligence community. So that's where I began with Big Intel, but then I thought, well, wait, how did this start? It just didn't start with Clapper because it took root really quickly. So I went in to see where are the roots, where are the ideological drivers, who was behind it, how far back did it go, and traced it back to the beginnings of our intelligence community.
You know, it's interesting because I think there would have been a period of time if the world had been told or American citizens had been told that you're going to have some people, whistleblowers, if you will, perhaps, within these agencies that come out and start exposing this information, then they would perhaps find themselves in real trouble. But it seems as if the folks who are running these agencies are pretty open to some degree about their efforts and unapologetic, particularly when it comes to wokeness and DEI. Is that a fair assessment?
Now they are, since that executive order from 2011. But before that, it turns out they were operating for several years in secret, meaning it wasn't classified. There was no reason to keep things secret from foreign enemies, but they were keeping it secret from the American public that this is what they were doing. So they were organizing this at the top, the Obama team. Later on, they became very public about it, but to the point where they're recruiting people who are woke, who are DEI-oriented, and who really believe that America is a bad, racist country that is not exceptional to any of the other countries in the world. And you can see this from their open recruitment ads.
If you would explain to the listeners the Frankfurt School.
Yeah, the Frankfurt School was set up by the Soviets early on, 100 years ago, and it was set up for the purpose of subverting Western societies and collapsing them from within. So not on the traditional, you know, communist revolutionary, violent, you know, workers rising up type of model, but instead to destroy culture. So if you destroy a people's sense of patriotism, people's sense of national identity, a people's sense of morality, religious faith, family, nuclear family, and all the things that keep it together. If you destroy everything that's good by causing doubts, by exacerbating those doubts, and by saying that basically 2 + 2 = 5, then you get to a point where societies destroy themselves. And this is where organized movements come in to take over and then have whatever type of authoritarian or dictatorial system that they want to put in.
There's been a lot of talk, accurately so, about Marxism and Marxists that find their way into some of these positions of influence and power. And sometimes I think that Marxism, it oftentimes isn't really understood. Yeah, I noticed during the rise of Antifa, it seemed as if there were quite a few people that didn't really understand what fascism was. The fascists were calling out the non-fascists as fascists, authoritarians that are authoritarians themselves calling out authoritarians. And I think some of these words that people just recognize, well, that's a bad thing, so I'm going to call my enemy that. All that being said, what is, in your view, Marxism? How's that different than communism and fascism?
Well, Karl Marx, we all think of him, to the extent we do, as a sort of an economic revolutionary, where it's the poor fighting the rich. And that's the way he became known with the Communist Manifesto. But years before he ever wrote the Communist Manifesto, he just wanted to tear apart society overall. And so his battle space was culture. So the cultural Marxism that we understand today was actually invented by Karl Marx in 1843. It's a sense of that everyone is a victim of some elite group, and then that group or movement needs to be destroyed along with the whole belief system. So that's essentially what Marxism is. It's a constant conflict that society has to be destroyed in order for something new. And that something new is always changing. So it's economic Marxism, now it's cultural Marxism.
We are talking with our author of the week, J. Michael Waller, former operative for the CIA, counterintelligence expert, the book Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. How is it that, well, this morning, or earlier this week rather, there was a piece Miranda Devine had in the New York Post about DEI hires being pushed into the FBI, and some of the revelations that were presented to the House Judiciary Committee, outside of the political component here, I think to most people are just completely outrageous how it is that they're hiring, the people that they push through to hire. How is it that DEI figures into this overtaking and transformation of the CIA and FBI from what they once upon a time were, the heroes, if you will, to where they become the villains?
Yeah, she had a great piece in the New York Post, and the whole thing with DEI is, if you don't support DEI, then you're a racist, and you're a bad person, and you have to be destroyed, as do all your friends, and your whole belief system has no value. So it's like being called a fascist before, or whatever. There's no escaping being denounced as racist. So a lot of people are afraid of that label, or they'll just go along to get along, and that's how these radicals are able to push through their agenda, by making everybody afraid of being labeled. So we already had in federal law and in federal hiring practices equal employment opportunity to not discriminate against people on the basis of, you know, race or status or religion or so and so forth. So those were already protected, and you were still hiring, you know, for the most part, the best of the best people for the job. Where DEI comes in is, it's not enough simply, equality is not enough. That's what the E, equity, is in DEI. It's equity, so not equality. So you're not hiring the best people for the job. You're hiring different grievance groups, or the radicalized elements of different grievance groups, to put in people for the jobs regardless of their ability, but it's based only on this social criteria. And this is where you get everything from really bad FBI agents and CIA analysts who view America as a bad place that's not worth protecting and view half the countries as enemies, all the way up to, you know, potentially engineers at Boeing or Alaska Air who are, you know, having the bolts fall out of the aircraft.
For those who are listening that missed earlier in the week when we talked about those findings that Miranda Devine wrote about, just to give some examples, that there was an instance in which one recruiter, someone within the FBI in the hiring capacity, had an applicant whose only job history was working 2 years at a barista in a coffee shop, and had an art degree, and did not hire the person, but then the higher up said, you know, we need black females, so you have to hire this individual. And I don't know that there is an answer to this, but it just seems to me that of the categories they are trying to fill, there have got to be more competent people than this just automatically picking a person who has absolutely no background or merit at all. Why do they seemingly pick extreme examples of the wrong types of individuals when there must be, for example, black females that would be great FBI recruits?
Oh, but sure, and there certainly are, because you need people from every demographic to go into various communities when you're doing your investigations. You need them to work with the Justice Department in different areas where there's, you know, Spanish-speaking people or gay neighborhoods or you know, inner-city neighborhoods or whatever else. And you need them to persuade juries. But you don't just hire them just for the sake of their demographic. And this is what's going on, because the FBI, by its own statistics, is a mostly straight white male organization, and it's driving the woke people bananas because there aren't enough tokens in there for their suitability. And this is the other thing, too. It's not enough simply to go along with this. You have to believe it. Mm-hmm. You have to embrace it. And then you have to personalize it yourself, so that you even have white supervisors saying, you know, I'm not worthy to have this job because I'm a white man.
We're talking with our author of the week, J. Michael Waller, the book Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. The culture within the FBI and the CIA, I've always tried to identify a culture based off of how an institution reacts whenever somebody gets caught doing something they shouldn't do. So, for example, you're always going to have bad apples, but if a bad apple gets caught, does everyone know, hey, this is not our standard? We are going to make an example of this person so others know, or do they circle the wagons? And that, to me, gives a reflection of the culture of an institution and what we've seen over the last few years, in my assessment, with these two institutions, is the circling of the wagons, the excusing it, or the, well, we don't have details on that particular situation. When it comes to the CIA and the FBI, I don't know that you can break it down into numbers, but how big is the presence of those that are directing these institutions into the wrong direction?
The presence is pretty small. You just need a small number of vindictive, intimidating, loud militants to change an organization. You know, it's like poisoning a water supply. You don't need a whole lot of poison to destroy a reservoir. And that's pretty much what's happened in the FBI and the CIA. So you have had people who were recruited in during a generational shift after 9/11, and a lot of people are recruited in, and they're changing the culture just by the fact that they're new recruits from an emergency major hire in a time of crisis. But then they get organized amongst themselves, but they're really not destroying the bureaucracies. What happens is when under DEI and under that critical theory, cultural Marxism, when you have radicals put in at the top, as Obama put in, they reach down into the system to recruit and then install lower level and then new people coming in to run the place in a very militant way. And that's when they determine who gets promoted and who doesn't. And they set up a whole matrix where you have to conform to certain social beliefs and practices in order to get considered for promotion to the more senior positions. And then so if you're career bound and you've signed up to join the FBI or the CIA for life because you believe in the missions, but you're now being run by people whose mission is to change the country. And they view FBI and CIA agents as what they call agents of change. That's not legal. That's not part of the law. That's not what the FBI and the CIA is for, is to change our society culture. But that's what they're working to do by their own admission in their own training materials.
Well, then the final question that I have, and as a launching point here, I know the frustration and the concern I have, and that I hear from others as well, is that it seemed like once upon a time, if something like this was revealed, if you had former or current members of the CIA writing a letter regarding a laptop that turned out not to be true, or somebody within the FBI submitting false information to a FISA court, heads would roll, that it would be this massive revelation that across party lines, people would come together and say this is unacceptable. But that appears not to be the case today, where there's almost this virtue of operating in this fashion and seemingly a political component involved, where if it happens during this administration, they generally circle the wagons again. And so this is where a lot of Americans, they feel as if, what's the point? There's no way to fix it if the people who get caught are unapologetic and continue on with it. What is the likelihood that we can fix this? Is it possible for these agencies to be turned around?
Yes, but not in their present forms. For example, most citizens don't know, and most sheriffs don't know, that county sheriffs have a huge amount of power. Right. And the FBI needs sheriffs and needs local police chiefs to be their eyes and ears, and often their hands, at the state and county and local levels. And a sheriff has the power to say no and to tell the FBI to go take a hike. And if more sheriffs got together and said that, you're abusing your authority, you're abusing the people in my county or in my jurisdiction, we are not going to help you, and we're instructing all our people not to help you, that would be a real kick in the pants of the FBI, because they wouldn't be able to operate. So there's a lot of power at the local and county levels that average people don't know, and that sheriffs, good sheriffs, need to understand it, because they don't have any idea. Imagine being a county sheriff and saying, yeah, you can stand up to the FBI. But it's their perfect legal right to do so. So that's one big thing in our favor. Another big thing in our favor is that if we have a new president to come in who has a well-organized team with a real plan to not just change, fix the FBI, because it really can't be fixed, in my view, but a lot of people will disagree. It can't be fixed because it is so rotten. But it has important functions, and it has great people and great authorities that the country needs for real legitimate reasons. So you parcel out different parts of the FBI to different federal agencies just to break up this big central apparatus while keeping the functions in an orderly way. And in doing that, you can purge out a lot of the deadwood and a lot of the real destructive elements simply by abolishing their positions. Because it's really hard to fire a federal employee. But if they don't have a position, they can't work for the government anymore. Well, so that's another plus in our favor.
Well, as they say, elections matter. they could matter.
They do.
In a very,
and that's
significant
why some people
degree.
Are trying to rig them.
Yeah. And arguably successfully so in some instances. Author of the week, J. Michael Waller, the book, again, Big Intel. You can get at ABC Books on North Glenstone. For Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed.